Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Fonterra Limited Q3 business update. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Miles Hurrell, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Miles Hurrell here, joined this afternoon by Mark Rivers, our CFO, and Simon Till, Director of Capital Markets, who, of course, you know. So quickly, I'm just going to take you through, firstly, some update on our strategic review and some of the announcements that we've put out this morning, some of the decisions and rationale. Look at the third quarter performance, the outlook for the remainder of the year, and then a quick discussion on the F19 and then F20 milk price forecast. But if I can start on the strategy, and we've announced earlier that we would come out in September with our new strategy. However, that is not precluding us from getting on and making some change with haste now for where we see opportunities that are going to be aligned with that future strategic direction. So we have announced today a full strategic review of our wholly owned farm hubs in China. So seven farms that we own, wholly own in China. This excludes the Abbott joint venture partnership we have. This is our wholly owned farms only. And we have got to a point where we believe we have contributed well to the establishment of these model farms. They are, at an operational level, performing well, but we think there are other options for the large amounts of capital tied up in those businesses. Secondly, and aligned with a decision that Nestlé have taken, who are our joint venture partners in Brazil, to review our ownership options for our DPA business there, our Dairy Partners of Brazil, which is our yogurt business effectively across Brazil, and we'll start that process with Nestlé jointly now. And thirdly, we announced to the team in Victoria last night the closure of the Dennington factory. A tough decision at any time, especially when we have 98 employees, which is going to be tough for them. Many are long-term employees. That's a pretty clear decision, however, on the back of low milk, on the back of the drought, and increased pressure, competitive pressures. And that we'll talk a bit about Australian ingredients in terms of our performance. I think what this is highlighting, though, is that we're clear that there is going to take some time to get through the strategic review. There'll be some ups and downs as we go through. There'll be a number of one-off transactions that we make. You've seen these three, in addition to three that we had announced previously, vis-à-vis Tip Top, DFE, and our ownership structure in BeanMate, which we can answer on a Q&A if appropriate. If I look at the third quarter performance, at a high level, generally not too bad, if I can say that, against where we had forecast. We are seeing some improvement around China food service, and I know we talked about that at the half year, that we needed to see an improvement. We have seen that come through. Generally, New Zealand ingredients performance has performed okay. However, we've continued to see a pressure on Australian ingredients on the back of the comments made earlier, a drought and increased competition for milk. And consumer food service is continuing to see, while some improvement in quarter three, we are seeing some headwinds still, which go into quarter four. I won't take you through the specific numbers of Q3 performance because I assume you've all got that, but clear, ask questions if appropriate, if you want clarity on any of those. So when I put that lens across the remainder of the year, as I say, while quarter three is not a bad performance, quarter four sees some headwinds and recovery in a couple of those key markets. Australia ingredients, Latin America, it will take longer than we had earlier predicted. In addition, there is some tightening price relativities between non-reference and reference products, which is giving us a position to go for a guidance change to 0.10-0.15 per share. If I think about milk price F19, the current season, we've reduced the range as we had intended or signaled earlier as we get to the closure of the season. So from 630-660 down to a 630-640 range. And then if we go into the F20 season, you know, we've opened that range again with a dollar spread, which really just highlight that it's a volatile business, as I'm sure you understand that the dairy industry is volatile pricing. But our best estimate at the moment is 675 midpoint, and that's what we're signalling to farmer shareholders at the moment. But clearly there are some upsides on that 725, but also risk of increased milk out of North America and Europe in particular when you start to reach these levels, as we've seen in years gone by, which as I say, goes a long way to giving a number of 675. I should probably apologise that there's a whole lot of information that I've run through in a very short space of time, but I might just open up for Q&A from here, and we've got as much time as you need. Thank you.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Ari Decker from Firth NZ Capital. Please go ahead.
Oh, afternoon, guys. Just a few questions from me. Firstly, just in terms of the DfE process, is that sort of on track for by year end?
Hey, Ari, it's Mark. So DfE process is going well. We're on track for things. We've had indicative bids from a number of interested prospective buyers, and so going through the process now. So still on track for year end. Obviously, in all these processes, the key for us is extracting maximal value for asset sales. So we won't let timing get in the way of that. It's more important to get the right value. But having said that, so far so good.
And just with regards being made, I imagine there's, you know, a bunch of hurdles you've got to work through, and you know, you've been tidying up some of your arrangements with being made as well. In terms of, you know, an exit from that, if that's what you decide to do, have you got a reasonably clear line of sight in terms of what's required to kind of execute that? Where's that one at?
Right, so this one too. So with the remaining financial stake, after having taken ANMA back and having taken back full control of Darnum, the nutritional facility in Australia, then we're left with the financial stake, and so we're just evaluating, you know, what the options are around that. But if we were to decide to sell, then that's a pretty straightforward sort of transaction.
Sure. Just in terms of the China farms, and, you know, take the point that you've got a lot of capital tied up there. I mean, from a performance perspective, you know, they haven't been performing that well in terms of what they're earning. You know, as you look at the options there, you know, and a number of options have been talked about for quite some time, is a complete exit kind of possible there, even, you know, even if it does end up sort of crystallising a large loss on the capital that you've invested? Or, you know, is that amongst all the options that are being considered?
Ari, Miles here. So the simple answer is yes, all options are on the table, and of course there are a number of variants that we could go down the path of. But certainly, you know, the businesses are actually performing quite well at an operational level, and we have made significant progress, and you'll see that at year end in converting more of that milk into higher value. It's just not at the rate to get us off that loss making that we saw at half year. So you know, I wouldn't assume that there's a loss brought forward if we were to sell those in its entirety.
Sure.
Yeah.
On the FY17 OPEX target, there's reference there to you know, the progress you've made, you know, versus the 18 base. Where are you sort of thinking? What timing are you looking at for getting back down to that FY17 OPEX base at the moment? What's sort of your view?
Yeah, so we had signalled a two-year time frame to get us back to that F-17 level. But fair to say, the trajectory that we're on would have us probably ahead of that. So we're very comfortable with the OPEX plans. We could always go harder, Ari, of course, but to see $73 million down at this point gives us confidence that we're well on track.
Oh, that's good. And last one. I mean, it kind of, you know, it feels like, and obviously you've still got some processes underway, you know, maybe you can just sort of briefly talk on kind of working capital and that sort of stuff in this year, but it looks like your debt reduction, you know, could be on track. But, you know, clearly, you know, as you're signalling today, the earnings kind of remain, you know, pretty disappointing. Just in terms of how Standard & Poor's is looking at the stabilised earnings of the business, you know, off that, you know, in terms of base levels, you know, and with a whole lot of divestment activity on the cards as well, are you comfortable that the earnings side of it's not going to create issues on the credit metrics, and it is just that $800 million that you need to kind of take off the debt in the first instance to shore up the rating?
Right. So, Ari, I guess I can comment, and Simon, you can chime in too if you have anything. But so we've had really good discussions. Obviously, we keep S&P and Fitch both very well apprised of the plans and how we're doing. We give them you know, a lot of detail around that, and I think the feedback has been, you know, quite supportive of the direction that we're going, and comfort on the divestment side that we're on a good path, and in terms of proceeds to get debt paid down in a good timing, good pattern. But as you point out, you know, it's the earnings side that's where we're falling short. So to the extent that we're falling short on earnings capacity, then to get that right balance of debt to earnings, you know, it's going to have to adjust. And so, but they certainly understand it's not just about this year. It's about, you know, getting to a sustainable level of leverage, the right level, that is then reflected in an A-band credit rating, which we certainly intend to do everything to maintain. You know, simply because that's the mark of a healthy balance sheet and a healthy business that strategically we want to be at, and just finding that right balance of selecting assets which are the ones that are not core to strategy, and maximize, you know, and exit those and dispose of those in a way that's really valuable, and across not just this year time horizon but over the next few years that we reach a sustainable state. That's the intent. That's their understanding. They're very supportive of the direction we're on.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Adrian Albon from Craig Investment Partners. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Miles and Matt and Simon. Just a sort of a follow-on question from where Ari was going with some of the strategic review stuff. Can you give us a sense, like, as you're going through this process and looking at effectively trimming some of your global tentacles, which you no longer sort of deem critical to the core, or you find a more capital efficient way of sort of maintaining or trimming them, can you just give us a sense of what you're finding in terms of driving out the complexity or simplifying, like, the core business, like in terms of that big group unallocated bucket of costs?
Yeah, Adrian, I'm happy to take that. And clearly step one is with the strategy is to, and that's where in the process of landing, and we'll come out with more detail in September, is what businesses do we want to focus on and be. And once we define that, then it's what structure do we need to support that, and what's the most efficient way to deliver whatever services those businesses need. And of course, you know, depending on the type of service, there are some things that you'd want to deliver more efficiently by being in a decentralized manner, you know, out in the countries, et cetera. Other things are more efficiently done just by centralizing and delivering that service from the center. But absolutely, the concept needs to be, because you see that as a theme that's running through a strategic review, is
It's focus, simplification, and the consequence of that should be a simpler, type of service that we can deliver to keep those businesses running. And the intention with the full year results is we will break that down into a lot more detail, so you'll see the transparency of where that is. You know, a chunk of that is R&D, a chunk of that, you know, which of course we want to maintain, and in the strategy we will have R&D spend. There's the more normal sort of back office functions around IT, finance, HR, et cetera, that are embedded in that. So all those things will be more transparent in the full year results.
Just one little piece to add on there is that there's a timing piece in all of this as well. Maybe if I use Tip Top as an example, so you know, close that out 31 May, and you know there is some complexity that's embedded in the wider Fonterra to support that Tip Top business, but on 31 May you don't automatically lose that complexity. You know, clearly there's a transition to new ownership and ramping down, if that's the right word, some of the complexity support structures that support Tip Top as an example. So it's there is a piece that you know those group costs that you refer to will come down over time as we reduce the complexity, but it's not a binary piece. Is probably the point I need to highlight.
And just further to that, Miles, when you reference the 2017 level of OPEX, and I think to one of Ari's earlier questions, you sort of felt that you're sort of making good pace towards that. This kind of activity should drop that cost even further, naturally, or is that included in this kind of target?
Intuitively, you could say that, but when we also set those targets, we started to think about some of the things that we'd move on quite quickly. So that was partly embedded in that, but you could imply as we start to, you know, accelerate some of these movements on these strategic decisions that over time that you know should move lower over time.
Okay. Just a separate question. Can you give us a sense of, for the New Zealand ingredients business, what typically is the regulatory, the regulated return that you would kind of expect to earn, say, in the fourth quarter? Like, I'm just trying to get a sense of, like, when you sort of put your divisional EBIT forecast out for the fourth quarter and ingredients sort of sinks to 83, I'm just trying to get a sense for how much sort of margin of safety is in that vis-a-vis what sort of Australian ingredients might be hurting.
So you're trying to tease out, I guess, on the core ingredient side versus Australia for Q4.
Part of the Q4. How much is the safe part of the Q4, the regulatory part of it? Is it just the regulatory earnings divided by four, or is there a seasonal component to that?
Volume plays a huge part.
Yeah, there's a lot more complexity to that for you. I mean, I guess, you know, probably have to have a longer discussion around all that, but with the milk price manual and how these things are calculated. Obviously, as we go through the year, we're effectively having to forecast what the COGS are going to be, right? And so part of the dynamic, in addition to what the mix is, you know, all of these variables, there's also an element of we're kind of correcting as we go, as our estimate on what the full year, the end of the season milk price will end up being, and so you kind of push that those true ups, if you will, in the remaining results, right? So when we go to the half year, there's an assumption made about what the full year COGS will be in the model, and that's reflected in the audited interim year results. And then, to the extent that our estimate ends up changing as the season progresses, which it always does, right? Because those milk prices certainly do fluctuate from month to month. Then that true up is pushed out in the results. And so that's part of the complexity of what we have to manage by fundamentally running a business that we don't know our COGS until the end of the season.
But just maybe a simpler question then.
No, go ahead, Adrian.
Maybe a simple question. You've narrowed, I guess, the ending point for the Farmgate Milk Price. Would that typically improve things for New Zealand ingredients in the fourth quarter?
Well, the benefit is just that we're getting closer, so we have more visibility of where we're going to be. So the estimate should be more precise. But there can still be swings.
Yeah.
Right. Those stream returns, those relative returns, can sneak up on you. So that's just inherent in the business of what that mix looks like, et cetera. So we've tried to approximate that with the range that we give you, but there's no doubt there is uncertainty that's just built in that remains.
Okay, but fair to say you're more nervous on the Australian side than the New Zealand side, given the issues in that market.
It's really been the headwinds this year. And what we expect for the full year now in the latest is the Australian ingredients that's really taken the hit with the drought and lost milk and fixed cost allocations and all that come with that, absorptions. It's the core ingredients, core New Zealand ingredients is actually, we expect we'll have had a pretty solid year. Not a year where we saw a lot of positive stream returns. In past years, we've seen that. So those relativities. I agree. I think it's mostly Australian ingredients story that's been a hit for us, where that volatility has been this year.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for your answers.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Marcus Curley from UBS Investment Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Just a few from me. I wondered if you could, just furthering on from Adrian's question, give us what the Australian ingredient EBIT expectation is in the FY19 guidance, so we get some colour on how bad the Australian ingredients business is expected to be.
Yeah, so I think we've not broken that out in the guidance yet. Sorry, Marcus, we've not broken that out.
Is it a negative number? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Secondly, could you provide a little bit more colour about your comments around the consumer food service pressure in Latin America in particular? Can you distinguish between the performance of DPA versus Soprole, please?
I'll just say certainly for the full year and the year-to-date picture, pressures come in both parts. Soprole's had has had a tough year in part just market conditions and some sort of local competition that's hit Soprole. They've picked up somewhat in Q3 and especially towards the end of it. There's lots of turnaround efforts around that to recover from those things. New products being launched, et cetera. So there's lots of work by the team to get back to that. And they've got, of course, a very strong local brand and excellent operations to recover from that. So there, it's really a competitive pressure that they've got to respond to locally. And on the Brazil side, I would say the impact is more about the consequence of the macroeconomic situation. So the categories that they operate in, the yogurts, et cetera, are quite sensitive to GDP. If consumers feel like they have more money in their pockets, then they tend to buy more yogurts, and so there's quite susceptible to that. So there, it's a function of as GDP improves, the macroeconomic situation improves, then we'll see that business do better. And we are starting to see that improve, in fact. It's just not picking up as quickly as we would like to see.
That's probably a key point. It has shown improvement over last year and the year prior, but our fourth quarter suggests that not at the pace that we would like to see.
Okay, and just on that division, obviously you're flagging a review of the DPA. Could you give us some colour on the level of contribution that asset makes?
Yeah, so I guess we don't break it out. We just show LATAM as a unit. But what I can say is from an EBIT perspective, pretty small. So
your expectations on sale proceeds there would be, again, small?
Well, yeah, so we'll see. I think it's an attractive business. It's got a good, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So, it's about identifying buyers who will see value in it. They've got a significant market share. It's a big presence. You got, Nestle brands. They've got lots of, it's an excellent manufacturing operation, solid distribution networks. It's a complex business environment, of course. So there's a, I think it will be attractive to plenty of buyers, as we think through the strategic options on that.
And by the sounds of things, is this a process that Nestle is running, or are you running it yourself?
We're running it together.
And when would you have you got some timing about? Would that be a first half of the next financial year style outcome?
No timing. We'll take the whatever time it needs to get maximal value as we evaluate the options and go path forward. So FY20,
we'd be in a position at the end of this financial year to update on where that progress is at and maybe some better timelines. But
yeah,
given we're only announcing that process, we're too early to confirm.
And then just two more. With regard to the assets that are likely to be finalised this year, Tip Top and DFE, can you give us any feel of the EBIT or EBITDA contribution those two would make in the FY19 number so we can make some adjustments for FY20?
No, I guess we've not broken that out. We'll look at the full year what kind of breakdown we can give you at the time.
Okay. And then finally, Miles, when you talk to the September strategic announcement, would it be fair to assume, within that, we'll get some colour on, any future, structural changes to the business, or will that, come later, or will it all be encompassed with sort of the new strategic direction announcement?
Organisational structure.
Okay. Yes, or obviously at the moment you're embarking on asset sales. There could be a raft of other things that you could consider doing with the business. Are those types of options going to be tabled in September, or is it just more of a revised strategy style announcement?
Yeah, so if I can answer, probably to be determined, and when I say that, without being flippant, so there'll be a more of a strategic lens to it. At that point in time, would we be further advanced on some other discussions and some other assets or other parts of our business? Maybe, and at which point will become clearer. And if there is a structural change, an organisational structural change, would we be in a position to announce it then? If we are, we would talk about that, but I don't want to confirm that just yet because, if there are implications on people as a result, I don't want to get ahead of things. So I can confirm it'll be a strategic. How far we go will be depends on how far we get over the next couple of months.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back for closing remarks.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And if you've got any follow-up questions, please feel free to give me a call. Simon speaking, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks very much for your time.